He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And you found a place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, sorry, just like Led Zeppelin. Let's just let that play for a while. All right, good enough. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you've got a question, comment, or you know, that was a formative album in my life, I have to admit. What is that, 30 years old, 40 years old, something like that? Anyway, it's been a long time, as Led Zepp says. Anyway, this is the place where we talk about wills, trusts, and probate. If you have a question, comment, or concern about how does the probate process work, how does that long-term care stuff work, any of that, so just give us a call, 888-463-888-463. I got to slow down on that, 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get you on the air. Now, we've got Alan on the line. Alan has been a real good sport. He's been hanging on here for quite a while. And, Alan, let me see if I can sort of recap what we're talking about. Situation where a friend is in long-term care at this point, is in the nursing home, is suffering under a penalty period. A penalty period has been imposed on the Medicaid. Medicaid won't pay, and that's due to what they call improper divestment. There's a house. There was some other real estate. The other real estate was sold, and the proceeds were given to a third person. Am I getting it so far?
You're doing great.
Okay, so here's the issue. Number one, in order to cure the divestment, you got to give everything back. That was my point last segment. Everything has to be returned. If you got $100, you have to give back $100. If you got $100,000, you have to give back $100,000. $99,999.24. That is not going to cut it. It's got to be a 100% cure in order for it to have any effect at all. Now, what's going to happen if it's not cured? Okay, if you don't cure the divestment, let's say that there's a year and a half penalty or a 1 year penalty period. Now, the penalty period is calculated based on how much you gave away. It's roughly for every $7,000 you give away, you're disqualified, you're penalized for a month. So if you gave away $70,000, 10-month penalty. It's a little bit less than that, but just call it 10-month penalty period. Okay? Now, when does that 10-month penalty period, when does it begin? Well, it doesn't begin right away. It doesn't begin when you make the gift. That was the old rule. Okay? That's been years and years since we've had that rule. So the penalty period begins when you're in the nursing home, all right? What they call otherwise eligible for Medicaid. What does that mean? It means you're in the nursing home and you're broke. So once you're in the nursing home and you spent all your money, then the penalty period begins. Do you see? So let's say you still had $70,000. You gave away $70,000 and you still had $70,000. They'll wait until you spent your $70,000, okay? And then for the next 10 months, they won't pay. Are you with me on that?
I got you.
Okay. Now, what happens to the house? Well, what happens is the state does not go after the house. That doesn't happen. Instead, what happens is the nursing home sues you, sues the person, and says, hey, you owe us this money. They ain't paying. You aren't paying. You got this house. Give us the house. And so they sue you, you know, for failure to pay, which, of course, they are going to do that. Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, you're getting services and no one's paying for them. So they sue you, and now you have to sell the house. Now you pay back what you owed them, okay? And whatever's left on the sale of the house is not exempt homestead anymore. It's cash. So now you have to pay that cash, too. And now when you're broke again, because you paid all the cash from the sale of the house, now the penalty period starts again. Are you with me on that? So it's,
wow.
Yeah, it's a real certain kind of sandwich, you might say. It's not a good situation. But it is one of those things, though, where if things are done properly, even now, things can be done to remedy what has already occurred and to make it better going forward. All right? And that's the thing. It's always possible, no matter how your back is against the wall, it's always possible to make it better. It's always possible to salvage something out of the situation. The question is, how are you going to do that? And that's really kind of the challenge. Are there more facts that would be helpful, you know, to talk about?
Well, the other question I have is, what happened is the conservator actually got appointed.
Yeah.
Okay, so the kids were not doing it, and the parent was unable to do it.
Right.
And the court issued a conservator.
Well, when you have a conservator, now the person, right, the LIP, the legally incapacitated person, even if they're competent, they could be mentally competent, okay? They could know exactly what's going on, everything else. But once the court appoints a conservator, they have no ability, no legal ability. They're legally incapacitated, meaning they can't sign a contract, they can't do a trust, they can't do anything without the permission of the conservator, who's been appointed by the court, or the court itself. So, you know, the fact that, I mean, at this point, as I say, you never say never, right? But the fact that you've got a conservator is one more hurdle, frankly. Because, you know, go ahead.
Is the conservator accountable to anybody? I mean, do they have to actually keep track of what they do and how they spend them? Do they account to anybody?
Oh, sure, they account to the court. But you see, here's the thing. Once you've got a conservator appointed, okay, the conservator has a very particular job to do, very, very particular, and that is to carry out what I call the black letter law, okay, the top line stuff, what the big book says, what the law that applies to everybody. And it's not their job to figure out how to preserve assets or choices or anything else. They have a very simple mission. If you have a house, if you have stuff, if you have assets, and you have bills, it's their job to sell the assets, generate the cash, and pay the bills, okay? It's not their job to preserve some of your assets so that as time goes by, as things go forward, that you get any extras, okay? So it's not the court-appointed conservator's job is not to figure out what you would have done. Do you see? With a power of attorney, you know, when you've got an attorney, in fact, someone who's been appointed as power of attorney, the goal is to figure out, well, what would Joe have done, and then let me do that, you know, to serve Joe's interest. That is not what a court-appointed conservator does. The court-appointed conservator, is it their job to look out for the welfare of the LIP? Well, yeah, but there's a very particular framework. There's a lens. There's eyeglasses, you know, I don't know exactly how to describe it. There's a way that they look at that issue, and it's not, would Joe like to have NFL game day on the big screen in his room? Well, Joe's got some, you know, some bills. Yeah, but I could pay the bills and still get him the big screen. No. That's too complicated. I'm just going to pay the bills. And,
right.
You know, and there's a whole nother level. When you've got a conservator appointed, there's a whole level of I don't want to say suspicion, finger pointing, blame. I mean, there's just a when you think about who they're usually used to dealing with, they're not usually used to dealing with people who are trying to be responsible. They're usually used to dealing with people who are trying to rip people off, and so everybody gets treated. You know, when you deal with thieves all the time, that's how you deal with people, and you just assume that everyone's trying to rip somebody off instead of working in their best interest. You know what I mean? They know better. Oh, yeah. You say you're looking out for your grandma, but we know better than that. You know, you get that mentality, and it's just, it's tough to deal with.
Yeah, and I can understand that because, I mean, obviously kids weren't doing what they should have been doing, otherwise mother would not be in this position, correct?
Well, could be, yeah. I mean, you got to look in the, but each case is unique. Each case we got to look at individually. Thanks, Alan. Thanks for playing along. You've been a really good sport. I do appreciate it. You're listening
hey,
to
I
the,
appreciate your help. Really do.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a life plan workshop. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843, and we'll sign you up. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you've got a question, comment, or concern about any of that kind of stuff, easy to do. Just give us a shout at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. You know, we've been playing a little bit of... the theme music this week has been rock and roll, so we've done everything from, you know, the Ramones to Led Zeppelin to Billy Joel. And there's a lesson here. Is there not a lesson everywhere? Everywhere there are lessons. I don't care where you look. But here's the lesson. When you ask people, see, Billy Joel, you know, he says he's rock and roll, right? Baloney, right? He's soft rock. Am I right? I mean, in the fiasco. Radio people, who's Billy Joel? Billy Joel is soft rock. Now, if you ask guys, now, for the longest time, the only way to figure out who was listening to what was by looking at their diaries, right? They, Arbitron or whoever it was, would send out these diaries and say, hey, we'll give you a dollar or $2 or whatever it is if you fill out this listening diary, okay? And if you write down my show, I'll give you an extra dollar. How about that? Just let me know. Anyway, so that's how they figure out what the ratings are. Now, in the soft rock category, how many guys listen to soft rock? Well, very low, 15%, something like that, 15, 20%. Very low guys listening to soft rock. Okay? Like, are you going to admit you listen to soft rock? Hell no. Now, the technology has changed. So now in some markets, you don't fill out the diary anymore. What they do is they give you this little, it looks like a pen. And what it does is it listens, it's got a microphone on it, okay? And it basically listens to whatever you're listening to. So wherever you are, it picks up on that. So you don't have to keep the diary, you just have to carry this thing around with you. Okay, and now, and then you plug it into the computer or download or whatever, however that works, I don't know. But the point is, now we know not what you wrote down you listened to, now we know what you actually listened to. Are you with me on that? So when you ask guys, do you listen to soft rock? 15% will admit it. When they carry around this monitor, what percent of guys listen to soft rock? I forget what the exact number is, but it's like 65, 70%. Well, I like Billy Joel, I'll admit it. But if I have to write down in a book, oh, I listen to soft rock, forget about it, I'm not going to do that. Now, where's the point? One of the things that we do in the planning process here is we do what we call a lifestyle advanced directive. Most advanced directives, the purpose of the advanced directive, the way that works, is you say, okay, you want to pull a plug, or, you know, if the surgery goes like this, what should we do next, da, 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 da. Well, when we do an advanced directive, when we do them, it's a lifestyle advanced directive. In other words, the question is, what do you like to eat? What do you like to watch on TV? What do you like to, do you like to read books? Do you like to go to the movies? You know, what kind of movies do you like? All that kind of thing. And it's very important, frankly, in the way we do this planning, to know at that time what it is you like. Because if we don't know what you like, how are we going to know how to spend the money? Do you see? I mean, the whole purpose of this is to hang on to your money while you're alive. Okay, but how am I supposed to spend it? Now, you know how you would spend it, right? But if you're in a long-term care situation, how do I know how to spend the money? If you don't tell us, if we don't write it down, if we don't give those directions to your attorney in fact, to your patient advocate, How do we know how you would want that money spent? And my whole point with the Arbitron thing is people make assumptions about what you like, about what you want. In fact, you probably tell people, oh, yeah, I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan, but that soft rock stuff, I'm not into it. Yeah, you might like Billy Joel, though. Okay? And you know, and they got that Rock and Roll Heaven song. That's not a rock and roll song. Come on. Give me a break. Jeepers. Okay? So tell us what you want so that the money can be used to support what it is you like. Okay? Do you want to watch soap operas? You can tell us. Okay? We'll put it down. Do you not like to watch soap operas? Well, fine. We'll put that down, too. Okay? So that we know how to spend the money that we're saving, because the point of saving it is so that it's there for you. It's, you know, this is not about who dies with the most toys. That is not the point. We've got Mark from Alto on the line. Mark called 888-463-2843, and you can too. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
What can I do for you?
I have a question. It is of a non-financial nature.
Well, I deal with non-financials all the time, so.
Okay. I have been divorced for over 20 years.
Okay.
My ex-wife has been remarried and divorced again. She continues to use my last name. Is that legal? And if it is, how can I stop her?
You probably can't. You probably can't. I mean, people get, you know, who was it? Back when I was in law school, Marvin Hagler, you know, the boxer. Called himself Marvelous Marvin Hagler, right?
Right.
And he actually went to court and had his name changed to Marvelous Marvin, or something like that. And I just recently had a client who had her name legally changed to initials. You know, it pretty much, you know, you can call yourself, you know, Bobo the Ape-Faced Boy if you want to. I mean, and unless there's some fraud going on, unless she's holding herself out as your spouse, there's probably nothing you can do to stop that. So
she can use my name, and there's nothing I can do about it, even though she's been remarried and divorced again.
Yep.
Huh. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. There may be facts that I'm not aware of, and of course, this is a lively legal discussion and not legal advice. But you know, you can call yourself anything you want, pretty much, so long as fraud is not involved. Now, if somebody is holding herself out and say, hey, I am Mark from Alto's wife, see my last name there? You can't do that. But, you know, especially when people have been married for a while, you know, the last name becomes part of that person. That's how they know that person. And, you know, some people go, I don't know what the stats are on that. I'll see if I can look up some stats on how often it is that married women resume their the prior name. I just don't know, or retain the quote unquote married name. You know, it seems to me we went through a phase there where there's a lot of hyphenated names going on, a lot of retained last name. You know, when people got married, the woman kept their maiden name. But cheaper, it just doesn't seem to be happening that much. You know what I mean? It seems like we've kind of matured past the point where we have to worry about that too much. But you know, or the exploitative patriarchy has reasserted its dominant control, blah, blah, blah. And so that's why we're not doing it. I don't know what the answer is, but it doesn't seem like people are doing it quite as much as they used to. But no, there's no way to stop somebody from using your last name. In a business context, yes, sure. But from what I've heard, I don't see it. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to give us a call at 888-463-2843, and we've got Brian from Door on the line. Brian, we'll get to you after the break. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law, and answering the important questions such as, is it possible to get enough of the Ramones? Probably not, but if you have a question about estate planning, elder law, real estate, or business law, now's the time to call 888-463-2843, and we'll get you right on the air. We've got Tracy from Grand Rapids. She called 888-463-2843. You can, too. What's up, Tracy?
I have a question. My father owns a farm in Central Michigan area.
Okay.
And it's about 100 acres.
Yep.
He has two heirs. also has the value of that farm is probably around $400,000 to $500,000. He also has assets in about the same amount. He is of sound mind and body right now and wants, I should say that it's also a centennial farm.
Okay.
He's gone through the process to have that as a centennial farm. He wants the farm to stay in the family. I have a sister who is not married right now, has been divorced a couple of times. I've been married for 30 years, and he would like, if we wanted the farm, he would like that to go to us.
Okay.
Me. And so we would like it too. So
sure.
My question is that the inheritance tax and how
right.
all that works.
Well, here's the problem that you've got right now. Until the end of the year, until January 1st, the mm-hmm. inheritance here, it's the estate tax. See, Michigan used to have
tax, right.
Yeah, Michigan used to have an inheritance tax, which was a tax imposed on the people who got the stuff. So if you
okay,
inherited
right.
something, you had to pay a tax on it, basically, okay? The estate
right.
tax, so there's two ways of imposing that tax. One is on the inheritance. So you hit the heir, you hit the person, or devisee, you hit the person who got the stuff, that's an inheritance tax, or you impose the tax on the privilege of dying owning stuff. That's the estate tax. If you died and you own this stuff, then we're going to hit you with hit the tax on the stuff, not on the individual. Small point, but it's important because we don't have inheritance taxes anymore. What we have are estate taxes. Now,
okay.
Until January 1st, the upcoming January 21st, right, of 2013,
okay.
the tax is imposed on assets over $5 million. So if you got more than $5 million, then they hit you with the tax. And until January 1st, it's a 35% tax. So you have to have more than $5 million, and it's 35%, okay, of the amount that you have over $5 million. Not a problem.
Oh.
Okay, so that's pretty good. January 1st, it changes. January 1st, it goes to $1 million, and the tax goes to 55%. Now, there's also gifting. What if your dad just gave the stuff away? Well, he can give away $13,000 per year per person. Okay? No, we don't have to report that. But if he gives away more than $13,000 per year per person, then it's going to reduce the amount that he can give away at death. So what a lot of people are doing right now as we speak, right, people with businesses and what have you, is they're quickly giving them to the kids to beat the January 1st deadline. Because if you think about it this way, if you've got a $5 million business, okay, and it's not hard to get a $5 million business, I
right.
mean, not easy, but you know, in your dad's farm, you're telling me it's 100 acres in mid-Michigan and it's worth $500,000. Well, I wonder if it isn't, worth quite a bit more.
Right, and it's a working farm, too, so there's
yeah.
it produces income.
Okay. And what if we weren't producing income crops on the farm? What if we were producing a subdivision? You know, I mean, I've got people with millions of dollars, you know, $2 million farm looking at the real estate, but it barely pays the taxes as a dairy. You know, I mean, people
right.
do that. It's a lifestyle choice.
Well, this one does. This is very, there's a tenant farmer on it right now that has been doing very well on it the last couple of years. But, of course, you know, you never know.
You never know.
Right.
That's the nature of farming, ain't? Well, mm-hmm. So here's the thing. What if they decide, well, you know, that's not $500,000. That's $1 million farm and plus $500,000 of cash. Well, now dad dies January 2nd, and instead of having zero tax due, now you owe 55% of $150,000. So you owe $80,000. Well, how the heck are you going to generate,
Exactly.
You know, and not $80,000, $800,000. How are you going to generate that? Well, excuse me, the first million is free. Wrong there. First million is free, then we've got the $500,000. Of the $500,000,
gotcha.
They want $275,000 of that. Excuse
gotcha.
Me, I'm just lumping the whole thing together. So what a lot of people are doing right now, and let's say you have a business, $5 million business, and you're thinking, well, it's $5 million estate, hey, no problem, I get to pass it on to my kids. Well, after January 1st, $4 million is going to be taxable, and they're going to want 55% of that $4 million. They're going to want $2,200,000. Well, if you got a $5 million business, how the heck is it going to sustain the body blow of $2.2 million in brand new, got to pay it to the government debt? The answer is it won't. It'll just fold in, which is why over the last 10 years since 2001, when the limit used to be 600,000, and then it's gone up and up and up and up and up. And now it's at the, then in 2010, there was no estate tax. 11 and 12, it's at 5 million. Everybody's hoping, praying, wishing, and dreaming that it'll be at 3.5 or 5 or who knows. But there's a lot of people heading for the exits right now. There's a lot of people who are just gifting their stuff out to their kids. Because, you know, elections have consequences. In the past election, 18 to 25-year-olds voted for the current administration by 60% of them. So 60% of them decided, yeah, I like this. I like having $20 trillion of debt. I don't mind paying that back. It's worth it to me to, you know, to lower my expectations in order that, you know, my parents, the boomers, continue to get everything that, you know, that they've become accustomed to. Okay, fine. Hey, listen, you guys want it. Now you got it. And by the way, we're also going to wreck what's left of the economy by introducing a $1 million limit, which is, you know, much, much lower than it was back in 2001, you know, just for inflation, much, much lower than it used to be, and at a full 55% tax rate. So,
incredible.
Incredible, except that, you know, what does incredible mean?
Yeah.
Incredible means you can't believe it. Believe it.
I know. What if I were to buy, it's not an inheritance yet. I mean, obviously, he's of sound mind and body right now. He's fine. We're trying to figure out how to get this done and not give the government half of it. What if I were to buy that prior to his demise or be on the title? What if he were to give me that farm prior to his demise?
Well, that would be
the
thing.
Does that avoid anything?
That would be the thing. And that's what these people, that's why I say when they're heading, what I mean when I say these people are heading for the exits, what they're doing is they're gifting. All right, they're using right now we call it the unified credit. The credit is up to $5 million. Okay, so what they're doing is they're giving their stuff. They're giving $5 million away, but they're doing it in trust. Okay, so that they continue to operate it, they continue to use it. Okay, but it's gone out of their estate for estate tax purposes. And you know, let's assume property values come back, right? Well, that $1 million or $500,000 farm, all of a sudden it could be worth, you know, quite a bit more than that, just on a, you know, dirt plus the bricks and sticks basis. And so, you know, you may wind up with a very substantial estate tax. I think it's something that he really needs to consult with somebody.
And
the clock's ticking.
Questions are to ask. So, and what kind of a lawyer do you go see? I mean, he's got his whole estate basically in a trust. He is the trustee. I'm the successor trustee.
Right. Well, he wants to go back to the attorney who set up the trust, it would seem to me.
Okay, that's what he's going to do. Okay.
Yeah, I would call that guy and say, so what do you think about this change in the estate tax law? And what do you think the effect is on me? Oh, don't worry about it. Okay, find somebody else.
Right, exactly.
You know?
He wouldn't do that. This is a... Yeah, okay. All right, that's good to know. But what about for my purposes? I don't anticipate a problem with the other heir, my sister.
Yeah, I tell you what, Trace, if you don't mind hanging on through the break,
sure.
We'll hit that when we come back. Okie doke? Okay, you're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a free life plan workshop. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you found the place where we talk about anything I want. We've got Tracy on the line. Tracy's situation, let me see if I can recap a little bit. Dad has the family farm, Centennial Farm now, which means it's been in the family, been operated as a farm in the family for over 100 years, been recognized by the state, so they put a little plaque green painted plaque on the out in the driveway so everyone can see that it's a Centennial Farm. We've got a sister who's been in and out of marital relationships. She just soon get the money, and Tracy just soon get the farm. First issue we dealt with was what does Dad need to do regarding the new the changes that are coming in the estate tax. I don't think we can count on. It looks like everybody is sort of like Mo, Larry, and Curly in the wheelbarrow going over the fiscal cliff. It seems like everyone's
Seems like it.
Yeah, and Mo's poking Curly's eyes and tearing out Larry's hair as they do it. But you know, there's a lot of dissension.
Still going.
Yeah, but it's still going.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of activity in that wheelbarrow, but it's still going over the cliff.
Exactly.
So it looks like we're going to... Yeah, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. Hey, we all go together. Too bad we're in the wheelbarrow along with them. But
right, exactly.
But here's the thing. To keep the farm in the family, you need at least to be thinking about... At least be thinking about what are the consequences from December 31st to January 1st when it goes from an exemption amount of $5 million to $1 million. The estate tax rate goes from 35% to 55%. You don't want to wake up January 1st and say, oh, jeepers, I wish I had thought about that before when there was something I could do about it.
Exactly.
And this is not, you know, the multi-gazillionaires, I mean, they've always had the problem. The problem is that $5 million level where you've got a lot of the tool and die factory shops, you know, you've got the smaller factories, you know, the family farms. And you know, when we talk about what's the value of the farm for federal estate tax purposes, we're not talking about what you could sell it for. We're talking about its highest and best use. Well, you know, it's very easy for the government to decide that the highest and best use is a subdivision, and you could sell it for a 100 acres. You could sell that for a multiple of what the valuation that you're claiming. Now, there are rules, you know, about how long you've got to keep the farm in the family or keep the business running, and there are some rules that allow you to pay the estate tax over time. They don't forgive the estate tax, but they let you pay it over time. You know, for family farms and family businesses, which are a total headache and, you know, kind of a straitjacket for trying to do anything, but they're there. I mean, it's possible. So that's the first issue that we dealt with. I really think you got to get somebody to look very hard at what is this thing actually worth, what is Dad willing to do, what are some of the structures that can be put in place to take advantage of the current $5 million ceiling or $5 million floor or credit, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. The idea that how do we take advantage of the current estate tax rates, I think that's important to do. Somebody's got to be looking at that for your dad. Second thing is, you know, how do we get the farm to me and sister when sister's been in and out of a relationship? Well, your dad could give you there's a range of things, you know.
Oh, that's nice. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that can be done. For example, he's already got a trust and he's got his assets in the trust. I'm going to assume that that's a revocable, you know, the typical avoid probate, save taxes, get it to the kids, revocable trust. Okay,
right.
Not a bad start. Not a bad start. But then the question is, well, what if sister wants half the farm? Or what if sister says, hey, yeah, I got $400,000, but that's worth $600,000, you know, mortgage
right.
the farm and give me the other $100,000. And the possibilities are endless from you get the farm and then sister gets whatever money's left over. That's a possibility.
Right.
All right. Or we're going to value the farm at 2x the state equalized value on my date of death. And we're going to credit, Tracy with that much, okay. And then if the money doesn't equal it, then Tracy has 10 years or 15 years or however long to pay the difference. That's another possibility. There's all kinds of ways of, or we don't care. Tracy just gets the farm, and you know, and sister gets whatever's left. That's another way of doing it. There are lots of ways to do it, but one of the things that, and this is sort of me mounting the same old soapbox that I always do, you know, the big threat right now is not the estate tax, because Dad's still alive. The big threat, the big thing that you've got to, I would suggest, would be an important part of any plan that you put together, would be the long-term care stuff. I mean, if Dad goes in the nursing home and you start paying, you know, $7,000 to $10,000 a month, it's not going to take long before it's just an academic question. And here's the other thing: when we talk about the Medicaid, which is how people pay for this stuff,
right?
There's no homestead exemption allowed if the homestead is more than $500,000. So if you tell me the farm is $500,000, I'm thinking $5,000 an acre with no value attributed to the buildings or anything else.
Right. That's about right. That's what he figures.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it's probably over $500,000, really.
Maybe.
And if it is, then he's just, until he sells the thing, he's just disqualified, or brings the value below $500,000. He's disqualified from the Medicaid. He just doesn't qualify at all. So once he spent his money, now he's got to sell the farm to get below the $500,000, which you don't want to do. You don't want to break up the farm and everything else. So
right.
A plan. So these are the two questions then. And he's at what, in Midland or something like that?
Mid-Michigan, yeah.
Mid-Michigan, okay.
Near Mount Pleasant. Middle of the mitten, basically, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's good farmland, tiled, all.
Oh, yeah.
No obstructions. It's really good farmland. And he's had a tenant farmer on there for 10 years, 12 years now.
What is that? Yeah. What is that town? You know, there's a town. Yeah. There's a lot of them, Adam. I'm saying there's a lot of towns.
Right.
Yes, I know. But I have a number of clients over in the Thumb. And okay. Back in the day when I used to drive over there on a, you know, every couple of month basis, there's a town, you go through the middle of the town and there's a plaque there, because I've been stopped at the red light and read the plaque a million times. It says you are in the geographic center of Lower Peninsula.
Oh, that would be St. Louis, Michigan.
There you go.
Yep, yeah. That's it. Yep.
You are in the, now, how the heck, you know, with something that's irregularly shaped as the mitten, I mean, how do you figure the geographic center? Well, anyway.
I never questioned it.
Me neither. I guess, there I am. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the middle.
Right there. All right. Those are the two questions, though, that I would have for the, for whoever he's working with. Number one, how does this, if I go in the nursing home tomorrow, what happens next? If I die January 2nd, what happens? Those are really the two things you need to have answers for, because those are the two threats to keeping the farm in the family and to making sure that dad's choices matter.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right,
Tracy.
That's good. At least I know where to start. Thank you so much for your information.
Oh, you're more. Hey, and come to one of our life plan workshops. Why don't you?
Okay. 888.
All right. We'll see you there. 888-463-2843. That's how you get to one of our free life plan workshops, and we would love to see you there. We're filling them up for the month of December, and frankly, it's a good time to come out because lots of times your family members will be in town, and when your family members are in town, bring them on to the life plan workshop, and so everybody is starting from the same basis. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to give us a call at 888-463-2843 or get on over to the website davidcarrierlaw.com. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.